welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There is crime in this hour, later on from a broadcast of The Whistler from 1952. But first, it's crime classics from September 7th, 1953 on CBS. The story, The Torment of Henrietta Robinson and Why She Killed.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. You have just been within earshot of a drowning. Not such a drowning as will cause shouts of alarm throughout the world, nor even a headline. Just tears, quiet remorse. For the lady who is weeping just drowned her doll, and a part of her life, and a part of her reason. She'll go on from here to people. She'll go on from here to kill by poison. So tonight, my report to you on the torment of Henrietta Robinson and why she killed.
Crime Classics, a new series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
The year is 1845 in the city of Troy, New York. It was summer, and the Trojans were all excited about the town's 56th anniversary, and showing it. Each weekend, the banks of the Hudson were strewn anew with burned-out fireworks and chicken bones, and the broken crockery mixed well with empty clam shells. The Trojans took easily to gay festivals, and the chronicles of Troy of the times tell us that 1845 was, and I quote, of glee and profound merriment. The scene we're interested in took place on a Sunday in summer twilight and has to do with a boy and a girl. They found an idyllic spot, as young lovers will do, which consisted of this, a grove of white birch and sumac and a pond, a clear and shallow pond of still water and sandy bottom, and a soft, warm breeze. Young lover?
Just sit as you are, Henrietta.
Young lover?
Like this?
Oh, happy time, gentle time.
So I can remember how beautiful you are.
To you, Joseph, I'd lower my eyes, but that I wish to look at you constantly.
Henrietta.
Yes?
The doll.
Here, you may hold her. You may go to Joseph Cecily. Take her. She likes you.
No.
No?
Listen, dear.
What?
Why do you bring her always with us? Why do you pretend she's a person?
Well, she is. Aren't you, Cecily? She is.
My sister threw away her dolls at 15, and you're 17. And because one day I hoped...
Shh.
What?
Shh. This world we're in, the quietness of it, trees and the sky, how very blue it is. And look there at the wildflowers. The hummingbird.
And you.
And you, dear Joseph.
May I kiss you?
Oh, please don't. There, I protested. Now kiss me. Oh, wait.
What are you doing?
Cecily's watching. I'll turn her face about. Stop it.
Henrietta.
You're making fun. Stop it.
All right.
I'll show you.
Oh, dear, what?
Show you.
Henrietta, put down that stone. Henrietta.
No one will ever know.
What?
This place we're in. This time. And how we love each other. Ask me again, Joseph.
About what?
Not to go back home to Quebec. To write my parents that I've found my true love. And you want to marry me and keep me here.
I do.
You were going to kiss me. Please kiss me. Oh. Cecily didn't watch.
All of us have our darknesses and silent screamings, but most of us don't throw stones at people. Henrietta Robinson did, and she treated her doll like it was a person. But outside of that, Henrietta was quite a successful girl of 17. Her small, quick angers were rare intervals between serenities and sweetnesses. She was beautiful and fairly formed and possessed of a background of elegance and wealth. Her parents in Quebec had realized a considerable fortune from a fox trap, much used in the Hudson's Bay area. When Henrietta's mother received a letter from Troy, New York, which stated that her daughter was deeply in love, she summoned her husband immediately from his fox traps and held family council, a result of which Henrietta was summoned home from her school in the United States. And as soon as she entered the house, a scene was made.
I will not have it. I will not have it.
Imagine.
But I love him truly.
I forbid it. Do you hear me? I forbid it.
How could you?
Joseph is handsome and he's gentle.
A farmer's son. No background.
Oh, I'm so ashamed.
I'm not. I want him for my very own. What joy to hold him.
Oh.
And when he kissed me, heaven was closed.
Oh.
And he will be mine forever and ever. No matter how hard you hit that table, Father.
Oh, girl, listen to me. You will not marry a farmer boy. You will not ever see him again, nor think of him. And as for marriage, you will marry whom I say.
And his name is George Locius.
And his name is George Locius. And he is a gentleman and a horseman and a soldier and has wealth and castles in England. He has seen a portrait of you and loves you madly.
What are you doing, Henrietta?
And he...
John, look at her.
And he...
Henrietta, what's wrong with you?
Stop carving up my table with my letter opener.
Child. Henrietta.
She ruined a fine Regency table, her father's favorite for pounding. But nevertheless, she did meet George Locius. And, surprisingly enough, they got along well together.
Can you imagine Lady Melville dropping her fan at such a moment?
And later?
Take a card, dear Henrietta.
This one?
Anyone at all.
You take one, Cecily. Here, I'll help you.
Your doll took the three of spades.
Oh, that's very close.
He wasn't very successful with card tricks, but he was an expert horseman, a daredevil of the high jumps.
Oh, it's exciting watching you, George. Isn't it, Cecily?
Give us your hand. Up we go. Now, hold tight. Now, you got. Take the square.
One night, in a place young people always seem to find, beneath a maple tree whose leaves shone silver under the first autumn moon.
I believe Cecily likes me, Henrietta.
Oh, she does.
And you?
Cecily wouldn't like you unless I did.
Henrietta, I've loved you since the moment I saw your portrait. What are you doing?
You'll want to kiss me, won't you? I'm turning Cecily's head away.
Oh.
Now you may kiss me.
Dear Henrietta. I said, dear Henrietta.
Daddy wants me to marry you.
Will you?
And Mother wants me to marry you.
Will you? Well?
Let's marry him, Cecily.
Henrietta. Henrietta, dear. Cecily. Henrietta. Where are you hiding, Henrietta? One doesn't hide on one's wedding night, Henrietta. Where are you? Henrietta!
Henrietta.
Higher guard.
What has happened to you? Why are you teasing the stallion? What's happened? Come, I'll take you back to the house.
No.
You're my wife. You'll do as I say.
No.
Wife.
Hold me.
It was the beginning of October when they set off for George's home in Europe. They booked passage on a steamer out of New York, and to get there, they stopped overnight at Troy.
I must do some last-minute shopping, George.
But why are you taking Cecily?
Well, Cecily always liked Troy.
And the two of them, Henrietta and her doll Cecily, instead of shopping, went down to a place which consisted of this, a grove of white birch and sumac, almost leafless now, and a pond of water growing cold. A place dying the season's death, but remembered for the time when young lovers sat in summer. And one was called Henrietta, and the other...
Joseph. Joseph. Gone are you, Joseph. Where are you? Are you dead? Are you dead, Joseph? And cold... Go to him, Cecily, and warm him.
She just drowned her doll, and a part of her life, and a part of her reason, and grew closer to violence. Closer. The year was 1849, the time when everyone was heading toward California and Mr. Sutter's farm. But Henrietta and husband George Locius set sail for England. It was a leisurely and serene trip under sail, marred only by one occasion. One of the voyagers on the last night out claimed that Henrietta tried to push him into the sea. The statement, however, was met with disbelief, since there had been a gay party aboard and everyone had dressed like pirates and there was much mock villainy and talk of walking the gangplank. In England, George Locius brought his wife to his estate a few miles north of London. Here they lived the life of English aristocracy, riding to hounds, puttering among the primroses, and having two children. It was the good life in a drafty mansion. There was, however, a servant problem. It seems that every upstairs maid got the feeling somehow that Henrietta was trying to throw her off one parapet or another. Each, in her turn, the maid would complain to Squire Locius, who would do this. That's the way George scoffed. And he would do this.
Here's a week's wages, and I'll write you a letter of reference. Then please pack your bags and leave.
But on about the sixth upstairs maid, this happened.
And I'll write you a letter of reference, and please pack your bags. No. Wait here a moment.
Yes?
May I come in, Henrietta?
Just a minute. Now you may come in.
I want to talk to you, Henrietta.
Do you like this gown, George? It came from Paris this morning.
I never like you in black. You know that. Why are you always wearing black these days? And why...
Why what?
Why have you taken to wearing that heavy black veil when you go about?
You know.
No. No, I don't.
Of course you do. To confuse them.
Oh, now, Henrietta.
Is that what you wanted to talk with me about, George?
Hester said you tried to push her off the east parapet.
Oh?
She said she was shaking the mop and you came up behind her and pushed her.
Wouldn't you?
What are you talking about?
She's one of the people, George.
Oh, now, for heaven's sake, what are you...
Oh, it's entirely a matter of self-preservation. She was put here to get rid of me.
Hester, to get rid of you?
One of the people. Come to the window with me, George. See there?
What?
Don't pretend.
What am I supposed to see?
It's useless to talk with you.
But what am I supposed to see?
Simply what's there out in the garden. The faces.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And something else I'll show you, too. This.
A pistol? Really, now? When did you buy a pistol?
If they should try to come close to me...
Henrietta! In the name of...
Whether or not she was aiming at George, we cannot know. We do know she didn't hit him. We do know that when she deserted him and their two children and returned to this country, he made no effort to bring her back. Nor did he ever have any trouble keeping an upstairs maid. Of the further history of George, we know nothing definite. We can assume he brought up his children to be every inch as good an Englishman as he, and as good horsemen, and probably much better at card tricks, and undoubtedly more finicky about wives. Henrietta went directly to Troy, New York, and of her stay here, I'd like to quote a bit from a newspaper of the day. Henrietta Robinson, as so she called herself, was found wandering through the city clothed in night apparel. She drank and raved over her broken hopes. She was found groping in the dark through the halls of public buildings, inquiring for the police office, and demanding of authority assistance to protect her against imagined persecutions. She wandered about the city armed with her revolver, and presented it on several occasions at the breast of anyone who had the curiosity to observe her movements. So we have come to the point in the history of Henrietta when she had become a very real menace. But no one did anything about it. They let her roam and wander and grope and present her revolver, and one day she was no longer young. And one dusk in the springtime, she wandered down to a certain pond, which was surrounded by birch and sumac, and there was a youth there.
Hello.
Well, good evening.
Isn't this a lovely place?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I stumbled upon it.
Is your name Joseph?
Why, no.
Sit with me.
I'd like to. Do you come here often?
Whenever I can.
Why?
To sit here. To look into the pond.
Why?
I try to remember why. I always try to remember. There's something... I don't know.
I was waiting for someone.
A girl?
But... Yes, but she's very late. I suppose she'll not come. I'd best be going.
Oh, wait. Sit here with me for a while. Talk to me.
Talk to you?
Is your name Joseph?
I have to go.
If you leave me again, I'll kill you.
What?
I would.
Well, that's a real gun.
I would.
I have no money. I don't understand. Please, I was only waiting for...
Where did you go when you went from me long ago? Don't be frightened of me. See, I'll put away this ugly thing, this pistol. No, don't be frightened. You always go away. And there's always the sound of you going away. Then why do I come here? To this pond. And remember... Remember what? Remember what?
That's all you get. Buy me a drink. Buy me a drink. Kitty.
You've had enough.
I know. But you're a friend of mine, and you're also the barmaid here.
And you have no money.
No. Kitty.
No drink.
lend me $2.
I don't have it.
Then I'll lend you some. Hundreds.
You ought to go home.
Oh, please, Kitty. A drink. Kitty.
Henrietta.
I was asking Kitty to buy me a drink. Tell her how good my credit is, Mr. Lanigan.
You ought to go home.
Your barmaid thinks my credit's no good. Tell her how good it is.
Here in my place, you got no credit.
Dance with me, Mr. Lanigan.
Huh?
come on. Dance with me.
Oh, get away from me.
Oh, you won't. That fella there just came in, Will. Young man.
Well, now, sister.
Young man, will you dance with me? And having danced with me, will you buy me a drink?
Dance to what?
Dum, 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 dum. That. Well?
Well, sure, I'll dance with you.
Oh. Dum, 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 dum. Oh. Oh, there, young man. Did you enjoy your dance? Then buy me a drink.
What's your pleasure?
Oh, a kitty. Gin. Gin's my pleasure.
Well, drink away.
Oh. Young man.
Yeah.
Another?
Why, sure. Hey, Lanigan, where are you going with that gin bottle?
She can't have no more.
Young man, tell him.
Lanigan's saloon, sister. He says what goes.
I danced with you.
You got your gin.
Get out of here, Henrietta.
What a way to talk.
Can I take her home, Mr. Lanigan?
Just get her out of here.
Come on, Henrietta.
Don't touch me.
I told you to get out of here. Now I want you out of here.
Out. Let go of me. Stop it. Don't.
Someone still could have stopped her. Someone who could see the stricken face, hear the mumblings, and realize that such a woman, one who brandished a gun every place she went, one who lived in a world of tortured fancies, and set the cry for someone named Joseph tumbling down alleys and dark streets, and always there was the gun. Someone still could have stopped her, but no one did. She was a whole night away from murder. No one stopped her. Perhaps it was because she was a familiar sight in Troy by this time. Perhaps it was because the Trojans hadn't run out of their jokes about her. Perhaps it was because of the way she finally killed. She pawned her gun for $3. Then she went to a druggist. She bought $2 worth of arsenic. In the early afternoon, she was as sober as she had been for a year. She went back to Lanigan's saloon, arsenic hidden, but waving her last dollar bill.
Good afternoon, Kitty. Here. Take this money.
Oh, you don't owe us anything? She owes us anything, Mr. Lanigan.
Well, if she does, we'll forget it.
That's kind.
Yeah, mind if I tell you something, Henrietta?
Yes?
When you're like this, when you're sober, you're almost what I'd call pretty.
Now, don't you start that like the rest.
Well, I was only trying...
Now, don't you start that, that's all.
Oh, he didn't mean anything. He was telling the truth. I bet you were a real beauty when you were my age.
Henrietta.
Yes?
Someone once told me you were married to an English baron or something.
I think so. I think I was. I think I had...
Now, I fetch your comb. I comb your hair if you want.
If the both of you will join me in coffee first.
I'll get some from the urn.
No, let me. I love to serve.
I'd consider it a pleasure.
And I would, too.
Just turn that brass spigot on the urn. Did you hear me? I said...
I was just getting the cups ready. Do you wish them sweetened?
No.
Nor I.
Yours, Kitty, and Mr. Lanigan.
Thank you.
Where's yours?
I'll get it. Now... We can all sit and chat.
Is this that new brand coffee, Mr. Lanigan?
Well, no. This tastes funny, doesn't it?
I remember now.
What?
About England. There was a huge mansion, and I was lady over all of it. Would you like to hear about it?
Oh, yes.
Drink your coffee, and I'll tell you. It was a very large house, I think, and it sat upon a gentle hill. And
strange taste.
What did you say?
Oh, nothing. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go on.
And it was drafty, but there were great roaring fires. And sometimes in the great hall...
Kitty, the barmaid, died from arsenic poisoning that night. Mr. Lanigan, the next morning. Henrietta was tried and found guilty of murder and sentenced to hang. There were murmurings, however, and talk of insanity. And one bright young lawyer made a plea based on the responsibility of society toward a tormented woman. On the basis of this plea, Henrietta was not hanged. They put her in prison where she sat for the rest of her life behind bars and a black veil. And this is the story of the world and Henrietta Robinson.
And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next Monday night, suspense returns to the air. Because of your kind letters, we will be back the last week in September and will continue through the winter. At our next meeting, I will report to you on the Borden murders, listed in my files as the Bloody, Bloody Banks of Fall River. Thank you. Good night.
Crime Classics, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of September, 1953, on CBS. At one point in the broadcast, it was mentioned that it was the last show of the summer series, which was unusual for most major radio programs of the day. They would either take the summer off or serve as a replacement for vacationing shows. In this program's case, it was broadcast week to week from that day, September 7th, 1953, to June 30th, 1954. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lifonier. Now time for a broadcast of The Whistler called Saturday Night, an episode first heard on CBS on April 27th, 1952.
Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's Strange Story. Saturday Night.
Staff on duty at the small hospital in an inland town 100 miles east of Los Angeles. Sunday night was much like any other night, except that Sunday was to follow, and most of the staff had 24 hours of leisure to look forward to. The attractive girl at the reception desk looked longingly at her wristwatch, and then glanced up as the sound of descending footsteps focused her attention on the stairway across the lobby. A moment later, Dr. Neil Layton, one of the interns, strolled casually to the desk.
I thought I'd come down for a little breather. It's kind of slow tonight, Patty.
Is that bad for a Saturday night?
No. It's okay by me.
Oh, it suits me fine. I got 2 hours sleep today. And 8 hours in front of me here at this desk.
Well, that's too bad, Pat. When you're on the night shift, you'll never see your grandchildren if you keep that up.
Oh, I couldn't sleep today. I had so many things to do. You know how Saturday is.
Good night, Patty.
Hope you'll have a pleasant Sunday.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Peters. Same to you.
Good night, Doc.
Good night, Neil.
Yeah, Patsy, it's like I said. A gal like you needs 8 hours sleep a day.
Did you get 8 hours sleep today, Doctor?
10.
You would. You know, you're an odd man, Dr. Layton.
Odd? How do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. You act like there's something bothering you. Like there's something on your mind all the time.
Maybe there is.
Well, everybody has things on their minds, but you could still go out, dance, and have fun, like the other doctors do. The single ones, I mean.
You're too busy. I'm still an intern, you know.
Well, you make being an intern sound like a sentence. Yes. Outside line? Yes, sir. Oh, here, I almost forgot, Dr. Layton. Maybe this pretty pink envelope will change your viewpoint.
Oh, a letter. When did this come?
I don't know. I just came on duty 10 minutes ago. Why don't you open it? But Dr. Layton, your hands are trembling. I believe your viewpoint has changed already.
Hasn't changed at all. It'll never change. Yes, Neil, your hands are trembling as you recognize the handwriting. Read the return address on the envelope. The address of lovely Cynthia Walker. She's out of your life now, isn't she, Neil? No, she'll never be out of your life, will she? You're just out of hers. You walk across the lobby. Choose a chair near a light. Stare into space for a moment. The memory of that last moment with Cynthia crowding every other thought from your mind. It isn't pleasant to recall, is it, Neil? The unfortunate accident that cost you your reputation, your position, and the love of Cynthia Walker at the very beginning of your career as an intern in an important metropolitan hospital. You remember Cynthia's angry words that followed. Yes, looking back to that day more than a year ago, it's hard to believe now that a few hours could have made so much difference in your future. And as you try to read Cynthia's letter, the words blur in front of your eyes. You can think only of the man responsible for it all. Charles Arthur Bennett, the man who lied when the truth would have cleared you. Charles Arthur Bennett, the man who called himself your best friend. Every time you think of Charles Arthur Bennett, you literally see red. Don't you, Neil? The sound of an ambulance wheeling into the receiving yard below shatters your train of thought. Across the room, a yellow light flashes on the switchboard. You put Cynthia's letter in your pocket. Cross to the switchboard.
Yes, doctor. Yes, I'll make out the registration card right away.
Admitting room, Pat?
No, Miss Wilson is busy. 412 has had a relapse. They're taking the emergency to the third floor. Well, Dr. Graham wants you to go to the third floor drug room.
What was the accident?
Car crash. Hemotraxic shock. Patient very weak. Dr. Graham wants you to prepare injections of thyrectomine and sacralin. Take them to the operating room, third floor.
All right. I was afraid we might have one of these before the night was over. Get any details?
No. Only that it was an automobile accident. The man is unconscious. But the ambulance driver says his name is Charles Bennett, a salesman.
Who did you say?
Bennett. Charles Arthur Bennett, Los Angeles.
Yes, Neil, it's a shock, isn't it, to realize what's happened. For more than a year, you've hated Charles Bennett. And now the girl at the switchboard tells you he's here in the hospital where you are now interning, the victim of an automobile accident, that you have to prepare the drugs that might save his life, that might save his life. The thought grips you. Hurry up the stairs along the hallway to the laboratory. Your thoughts go back to that night more than a year ago. The circumstances were quite different then, weren't they, Neil? Because, although you didn't realize it, that night you were at the mercy of Charles Bennett. The night that brought you disgrace and cost you the love of Cynthia Walker. The night which began with a birthday party for Charles Bennett at the home of a mutual friend. But as far as you were concerned, there were just the three of you. You, Charlie, your best friend, and Cynthia.
Yes, Neil, things were much different then.
It's a wonderful party. I wish I didn't have to leave right in the middle of it.
I do too, Cynthia. But if you must, you must. I'll drive you home.
Oh, no, Neil. I've already phoned for a taxi. This is the first time you've been off duty away from the hospital in quite a while. You stay here and relax. Have fun.
Okay, but I might get into trouble.
I trust you. You're a big boy now, or I wouldn't have told you I'd marry you.
Have you told Charlie Bennett?
Oh, not yet. I'll tell him tomorrow. I don't want to seem conceited, but telling him tonight I'm going to marry you might spoil his birthday party.
It would.
By the way, where is Charlie?
Oh, he's around. Over there in the corner, I think. That island completely surrounded by an ocean of blonde.
Well, I wouldn't think of invading that territory just to tell him goodnight. You'll tell him for me, won't you, Neil?
Sure. You really have to go.
I'm afraid so. Jane's only in town for the night, and I don't get to see my sister very often. My taxi ought to be here by now. It's your night off. Have fun. You interns don't get out of that hospital often enough. And the champagne is wonderful.
Anything you say, darling.
Reluctantly, you see Cynthia to a cab and come back to the party. You take Cynthia's advice, too. Enjoy a little champagne. Make party talk with other friends. And you do have a good time, don't you, Neil? You relax for the first time in weeks.
Oh, don't be so stubborn, Neil.
Don't doctors ever have any fun?
Come on, Neil, old kid. Have a little fun.
Come on, Martha. This one's really got to be. Come on.
You got an old doc, that gorgeous blonde over there by the window's been eyeing you all evening.
Go on over. Ask her to dance.
No, you do it, Charlie. I'm not in the mood. Maybe a little later on.
Anything you say, kid. It's your night up. If you want to cogitate about Hippocrates, it's okay by me. Have a little more champagne to color your dreams.
All right, Charlie. Maybe you're right.
For another hour or two, you enjoy yourself. Let yourself go. Stay until most of the crowd has left. Finally, you even convince your friend Charlie that it's time for him to go home, too. And in the lobby, going out.
Why don't you leave your car here, Charlie, and go home in style, like I am?
What do you mean, in style?
Take a taxi.
What's the idea? I can drive, Neil. Don't tell me the good doctor's in his cups from a little champagne.
No, but I never drive when I've had anything to drink.
Well, you don't have to drive. A little bit of champagne won't bother me any. Look, I'll tell you what. We live close to each other. If you don't want me to drive my car, we'll use yours. You know I'll be careful with your car. I can pick mine up tomorrow.
Well, I'd sure rather take a taxi.
Aren't any taxis around anyway?
There's a stand about 3 blocks away.
Not at night. Besides, you'll need your car to get to the hospital in the morning. Oh, come on, Neil. I'm okay. I'll be careful.
All right, if you're sure, let's go. But take it easy now.
Once in the car, before Charlie starts the motor, you make one more effort to talk him out of driving, but to no avail. You're getting a little weary of the slight argument, so you let him drive the car. And after the first few blocks, you decide you have nothing to worry about. Charlie seems to be driving satisfactorily. Slightly over the speed limit, it's true, but he seems to have everything under control. Until he suddenly turns a corner sharply.
Take it easy, Charlie!
That's the last you remember for a little while. When you open your eyes, you feel a dizziness, a dull pain at your temple. And someone talking. Someone.
Come on. Are you hurt?
Hurt? Oh, no, officer.
Yeah, not much, I guess. Just a bump on the head. That lamppost made quite an impression on your car, though. What's the idea of driving like that?
Why, I wasn't driving. Charlie was.
Oh, Charlie was driving, huh?
Yeah, where is he?
I wouldn't know. Say, you're a little on the woozy side, friend.
But Charlie, where is he?
Come on, chum, that's enough about Charlie. How much have you had to drink, anyway?
Oh, not much. Look here, officer, Charlie was here. He was driving.
No one was here, chum. I heard the crash around the corner, came straight here. No Charlie, no nobody, just you. Not even the little man who wasn't here.
But he couldn't have gone. Maybe he's hurt and fell out of the car.
Nobody fell out of the car. Nobody's around here but you.
But Charlie...
That's all, chum. Come on. We got a swell place downtown where you can sleep on it.
It's like a nightmare, isn't it, Neil? You're bewildered, confused by what's happened. It's all a mistake, a horrible mistake. And you're sure Charlie will show up soon and explain everything. Then you're booked at police headquarters. Spend the rest of the night pacing back and forth in the city jail. But finally, next morning, someone comes and puts up bail for you. Outside, Cynthia is waiting.
Hello, Cynthia.
Good morning, Neil. I came as quickly as I could.
Thanks. Thanks for springing me.
Come along, Neil. I'll drive you home.
How'd you find out I was here?
The whole story's in the morning papers. You mentioned your connection with the hospital, too.
I suppose so.
Dr. Rogers called me about it. He was quite concerned.
Well, he needn't have been. We'll get this whole thing cleared up in no time. No time at all.
I hope so, Neil.
Sure, as soon as I see Charlie Bennett.
Charlie?
He'll tell him what really happened. He was driving the car. It was all his fault. I was just... What's the matter, Cynthia? Why are you looking at me like that?
I've already talked with Charlie.
Well, he told you then how it really happened.
How could he? Charlie said he took a cab home from the party last night. Alone. Tried to get you to do the same thing.
It leaves you stunned, doesn't it, Neil? You're certain there must be some mistake. But once Charlie understands how much it means to you, he'll realize what's happened and tell the truth. It's too late to prevent the unfavorable publicity for the hospital. But at least you could be cleared in Dr. Rogers' eyes and in Cynthia's. You see Cynthia safely home and then take a taxi directly to Charlie's apartment. He isn't there, but the desk clerk recognizes you as a friend and lets you in. You settle down to wait and to think. Nearly 2 hours later, a key sounds in the door.
Neil, boy. Why don't you tell me you were coming? I would have left a key for you.
I didn't plan on it. Anyway, the desk clerk let me in. You talked to Cynthia on the phone this morning, didn't you, Charlie?
Cynthia? Yes. Naturally, she was worried about you.
Naturally. And what did you tell her?
Oh, that's what's worrying. Well, I didn't mean to do it, Neil, but I had to. You understand. You want a drink?
No.
Don't mind if I do.
Look, Charlie, I'm trying to give you a chance to explain.
Okay. There's no reason to get sore.
You lied to Cynthia. Why?
I told you. I had to. You know, as a salesman, I have to drive a car to make a living, Neil.
What's that got to do with it?
Only everything, that's all. Look, Neil, I didn't bother to mention it to anyone, but I was in a scrape 3 weeks ago. I got hauled up for hitting another car while I was, well, a little tight. I got off with a fine and a warning that time.
Wait a minute. You mean you deliberately let me take the rap for your accident last night?
I tell you, I couldn't help it.
You know what a spot this has put me in? Hospital has a reputation they're pretty jealous of.
Sure, and I've got a job.
And so have I. I think you better put on that drink and get your coat on, Charlie.
Why?
Because you're coming with me to explain to Dr. Rogers. Then we're going together to see Cynthia.
What good would that do? It's all over now.
You mean you won't?
I mean I went home in a taxi last night alone. I told my story once, Neil. I don't see anything to gain by changing it now.
You're going to regret this, Charlie. Plenty.
After you leave, it suddenly occurs to you that Charlie has a more important reason for lying. His job is only part of it. He's always been in love with Cynthia, too. And despite your long friendship, apparently believes that anything's fair in love and war. It's as simple as that, isn't it, Neil? And with you out of the way, he's sure he'll have a clear field. And Cynthia, after all this, what about Cynthia, Neil? You have to be sure of Cynthia, don't you? Half an hour later...
Neil, I just can't understand.
You don't believe me, do you? And you do believe Charlie.
Why would he lie about a thing like this?
Because he didn't want to lose his job. And because with me out of the way, he thinks he could marry you.
Oh, that's fantastic. I've known Charlie for years. He wouldn't do a thing like that, Neil. Besides, he's your best friend.
Yeah. He's proved that, hasn't he?
Neil, aren't you forgetting that Charlie wasn't found in the wreck? That you were. You. All alone. Your story is too far-fetched. The police don't believe it. Charlie says it couldn't have been that way.
And you, Cynthia? What do you say?
Oh, Neil, what can I say? Do you think I want to believe this? And Dr. Rogers and the Foundation, what do they say?
Naturally, I resigned from the hospital this morning. I couldn't do anything else. I don't blame them for what they think, any of them. But you, Cynthia, I thought... Oh, never mind. I guess there's no use in going over it all again.
Neil, you... You're not going.
Why not? I don't seem to be getting anywhere.
What's going to happen to your career, Neil? Do you think you'll be able to intern anywhere else?
I think so. I'm just as qualified as I ever was. My previous record was good, and I've learned a great deal about human nature. I'm sorry this has been too much for you, Cynthia.
I haven't.
You wouldn't consider marrying a man you didn't believe, would you?
I want to believe in you more than I ever wanted to believe anything.
Well, maybe you will someday. Or maybe you'll learn the truth. When you do, let me know. You'll be able to find me.
Yes, it all happened more than a year ago, didn't it, Neil? Then you cut off all contact with your friends in Los Angeles. You've often wondered if Cynthia ever married Charlie. And every time you've wondered, your hatred toward him has grown deeper. You've even thought of killing him, haven't you? And now, tonight, more than a year later, in a small, out-of-the-way hospital, fate places the life of Charles Bennett squarely in your hands. The switchboard operator has told you he's in the operating room unconscious, seriously injured in an auto accident. And you've been assigned to prepare the medication, which will spell life or death for him. Just a little too much, or not quite enough? It's almost too easy, isn't it? You're sure that if anything goes wrong, not the slightest suspicion will be attached to you. You smile as you enter the drug room and find another intern there.
What's the emergency, Layton? Car wreck. You assisting?
No, no.
Just preparing Mr. Epton and saccharine shots. Must have been a pretty bad accident.
Great so. Did you ever stop to think of the power in these drugs, Phil? Just the right amount means almost certain recovery. A little too much, or too little, oblivion.
Do you always get this philosophical when you come to the drug room?
No. I guess this case made me think about it more than usual. I know the guy.
Friend?
You said it. What a friend.
Huh. Kind of an unusual situation, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? Almost ironic.
Did you know that in... Well, Neil, the die is cast, isn't it? You've donned your sterile mask and gown, prepared the injections, carried them to the operating room, where you place them on the instrument tray, without even a glance at the masked, sheet-covered patient. You note Dr. Graham's nod of dismissal, and quietly leave the operating room, where the patient's chance for life depends on the drugs you've prepared. You never dreamed you'd have such a perfect opportunity with Charlie Bennett, did you, Neil? After removing your mask and gown, you return to the hallway. Light a cigarette. Stand staring out a window. You remember the disgrace Charlie brought upon you and your shattered hope, the happiness you might have had with Cynthia, his utter selfishness. You decide to finish reading Cynthia's letter.
Now, after a year, I realize how hasty I was in my judgment.
Suddenly, your heart beats faster as you realize she's still Miss Cynthia Walker. You can almost hear the words as the melody of her voice haunts your memory.
But you were more so in your actions. Your sudden, abrupt leaving, not letting me know where you were. I know now how wrong I was to doubt you. But even when my doubts were deepest, I loved you. You told me once, a woman loves in spite of man's weakness, not because of his strength. Remember, Neil? Well, so it was, and is, with me. I haven't changed, and I can't believe that you have, Cynthia.
You turn away, stare out the window. Suddenly, you're horrified that you, a doctor, have allowed your hatred for Charles Bennett to bring you to the point it did. Finally, the door to the operating room opens. Still form is wheeled silently past. You continue to stare out the window. Then you toss away your cigarette, light another. Wait for Dr. Graham to emerge from the operating room. As he leaves the operating room and enters the hallway, you walk slowly toward him.
How's the patient, Doctor?
Patient's going to be all right. Glad you were around. The Reptimans are godsend. May I have a cigarette, Layton?
Sure, Doctor.
Oh, I wish these new drugs had been available when I first started practice. Matter of fact, I wish I were young like you, just beginning. Yeah, you'll be a great doctor one day, Neil.
Will I?
Yep. You're honest, sincere. You could no more evade your duty than commit murder.
No, I guess I couldn't. I almost made a terrible mistake a little while ago, though. A mistake that could have been fatal to your patient.
Mm. But you didn't, did you?
No, I didn't.
You won't make many mistakes, Neil, of any kind. Medicine is, well, it's in your heart.
Yes, I guess it is. I'd like to talk to Charles Bennett a few minutes, Doctor.
Well, go ahead. He's lying down on the couch in my office. Bennett wasn't seriously injured, just knocked out temporarily. He was driving the car.
But you just operated.
Oh, that wasn't Mr. Bennett. I operated on the young lady who was with him. It seems they were on their way to see someone here at the hospital. She'll be okay, too. As fit as ever in a week or so.
A young lady?
Yes, her name's Walker. Cynthia Walker.
Whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 27th, 1952 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.